Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is sponsored by Safe, the account abstraction leader on Ethereum.
I think we are at Ready Player One, but it's not to escape reality. It's like, how do we go beyond the limits of reality? And so if you're missing a game, but you want to relive it, or if you're missing a race or a match and you want to sit like you are sitting courtside, like this allows you to do that. And so it isn't about doing the unrealistic. It is about, I think, doing it differently and immersing yourself in a technology that allows you to feel like you're literally there.
Sam, it is so good to see you today. I can't wait to catch up, and I cannot wait to hear what you thought of NFT NYC 2024.
Avery, first of all, so nice to see you. I know you're in Mexico right now. I'm super jealous. You know, it's one of my most favorite cities. So just next time you're going, if you could just add me to the calendar, then I'll just figure out my way there and we'll have a meeting.
Come hang at VaynerMex.
Yes, absolutely. NFT NYC. I had counted out this event as dead. And I was very surprised in a very pleasant way that it's not. But what's very interesting about it, Avery, is it's very much become a decentralized conference. I don't think I met anyone who actually went to the event itself, which is probably an economic challenge for them because they are in the Javits Center, which is not a cheap building to work in. But there was a ton of energy, like a suite of amazing events that happened every single day, every single night. I had so many valuable conversations, met so many people, saw so many like just wild things. I mean, the fact is the crypto dick butts community literally rented out the UBS ice skating arena at like 2 a.m. on Saturday and held dick butts on ice for like 200 loyal fans. I mean, a 20,000 seat arena.
Were you amongst that loyal fan base?
I was not. I literally, at that point, I had zero energy left. If it was earlier in the week, I would have gone. But I think that it's no mistake. Like we talked about with the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, it's no mistake that you have a crypto event in New York and you're going to get a lot of people to come because they just want to come to New York. They know there's so much energy and so much stuff happening here. And it was a great week just because like all the people were in town that you wanted to spend time with. And it made me really sort of just bullish that there's still enough of the NFT and art community and digital collectible community and gaming community around that they're showing up and they're still building. And, you know, we'll see what happens with it. I'm sad you were not here, by the way.
I know. We actually did a small event for the VeeFriends team at Little Maven. Shout out Little Maven, a VCR group restaurant that Gary owns. And seemed like it was awesome. Although it was a rainy day, there was, like you just said, I think it was the loyal fans who were like really in it. And NFT NYC is not going anywhere. I saw it all over my timeline, all over my feed, a lot of insights, a lot of people meeting up, still a lot of people traveling in. Don't count out the NFT folks.
Absolutely.
But are they the meme coin folks now? That's my question. There's a very heavy overlap.
There's a lot of conversation around that. And I think probably a lot of people spending some meme coin money to come to New York, to be honest. So maybe it actually helped the industry in that respect. Avery, one story I wanted to get your opinion on. I don't know if you've seen, but Google just launched something called Vids. Vids is a Gen AI video collaboration tool. We now have seen Sora. We know Runway's out there. There's a bunch of folks in the space. What I thought was interesting about this was they're really trying to center around the Google ecosystem around collaboration in docs. So the idea is that we can be working on a screenplay together and then it can generate, you know, some scenes, right? Or like a mood board for what we're trying to do or we can be working on a collaborative music project and can generate the album cover. So I guess I think about this derivative video is great for sort of explaining things and bringing something to life. And I know last week you were like, we're going to save this clip about me predicting that we're not going to get a feature film. But I guess I keep thinking about generative video and I love it as actually a business use case. I sort of hate it as a consumer viewable experience. What are your thoughts about vids?
Okay, so I'm going to be honest, I have not personally used it. However, I think Google is doing a bunch of sort of exciting and interesting things in the world of like AI, and they haven't had a breakthrough product yet that has been like, oh, wow, this is something I haven't seen before. It's kind of like, okay, sweet, you took meeting notes. Okay, like Bard, it's kind of like ChatGPT, just slightly worse. And I think I'm excited because like they're going to have it. Like it's Google and they're sitting on so much data, so much understanding of their consumers. So maybe it's fits. I'm going to try it out. On our side, and we should do a whole episode on this, we've actually been seeing an interesting like retraction on brand interest in AI, not on the media side, media optimization. Like it's, we're all in, like totally. That's happening. Duh. Why wouldn't you? It makes all sense in the world. On the creative side, it's kind of like the lack of differentiation, I think, is challenging. And I think there was the hype and like it's pulled off and we found like easy, quick turnways like asset resizing and things like that. But while I think we're seeing a lot of like AI stunt campaigns and like, how can I use this to cut my cost of creative by 50%? Yeah, you can cut your cost of creative by 50%. You can cut your effectiveness by 90% because you're just putting out the same thing that everyone else is doing. We should definitely dive into this more because it's an interesting sort of pendulum that's swinging. And we're not in a space where we're just like looking at using AI tools to like automate our whole creative process because the output just isn't strong. That's too bold of a statement. The output can be strong, but you need to really know how to use it. And I think the like promise, the sort of like excitement that we were feeling a year ago is still there, but it's tempered with the legal and ethical questions of like, where is this coming from? And it's also tempered by the effectiveness question.
I'm going to make a bold statement to your bold statement, which is that I think the promise of being truly creative with AI is a tech bro fantasy from people who are not very creative. And I think that to me is the larger challenge, which is if creativity is really about going against the grain and doing things that are unexpected, and those are usually the creative things that stand out, right? When Beyonce launches a country album, that's her not playing normal Beyonce. Whereas if you trained AI on what should Beyonce write next, it's going to be classic Beyonce.
It's predictive.
Right? Exactly. And so the idea of predictive and derivative is wonderful for things like stock art or stock music or stock imagery. But for you as a creative mind in a creative industry, it's that uniqueness that is very special to humans that is very hard to replicate. I had this conversation the other day where I was saying, I don't think that AI would have made Poor Things, the movie, which is a truly different and odd fantasy. And then I actually reimagined my statement. And I said, in 2 million different outputs, maybe AI does create Poor Things, but you have to get through the 1.999 million of them to find the one that's going to be it. And that is going to take so much work. It's better just to have Yorgos make the movie he wants to make and not try to make a Poor Things movie with the AI systems. And so I do think that I'm really happy to hear what you just said, because I do think that brands over-index often, right? I remember telling you about the Coca-Cola AI flavor that was truly disgusting and should never have been made. But the fact that they put out one, I mean, I get it for the PR, but like someone with actual taste buds could probably do a better job at making a soda flavor.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that like era of like the stunt is super over the automation stuff. And I do want to separate out like media, it makes sense.
Yes.
Like media bid and buying optimization. Honestly, that's been happening for many years anyway. It's just sort of like a new wrapper for it. Even some elements of production, like things like resizing or even translation, like, you know, first pass, mm-hmm. I think it's fine. The creative totally. Side of it, there, you know, there's nothing like a human, at least for now.
At least for now. All right, Avery, with that, we're going to get to our guest. We have an amazing guest. We've been trying to get this guest to come on our podcast. I'm going to say for the better part of the last year, Shahar Scott from Meta Reality Labs, big, big thinker, big marketing brain, really, really knows where we are today and especially where we're going when it comes to augmented reality, mixed reality, additive realities, the devices that may define our future. Really excited for this conversation. Shahar Scott will be joining us after the break. Safe is enabling ownership for all with smart accounts. With over $100 billion in total value stored across over 14 networks, Safe accounts are embedded everywhere, including DeFi Saver, WorldCoin, Dracula App, and more. Build and use the most battle-tested smart account in Ethereum. Visit safe.global. Consensus 2024,
Global crypto regulation, the disruptive power of AI, the rise of tokenization. Consensus is the one event where experts convene to talk about the ideas shaping our digital future. Join developers, investors, founders, brands, policymakers, and plenty more in Austin, Texas, from May 29th through the 31st. The 10th annual Consensus is curated by CoinDesk to feature the industry's most sought-after speakers and provide unparalleled networking opportunities and unforgettable experiences. Take 15% off registration with the code GenC15. Register now at consensus.coindesk.com, and I'll see you there.
Good morning, Gen C. I am so excited to welcome our guest today. This is going to be probably the best podcast ever because it's taken us some time to schedule it, and I know you all are going to really, really enjoy this episode. Today, we're joined by Shahar Scott. She is a marketing leader who's helped build some of the brands that you love most in this world, and is most recently sort of down this path of innovation with what she's doing at Meta and Reality Lab. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself to Gen C, and maybe share a bit about what you're up to these days?
Thank you so much, Sam and Avery, for having me. The bar is really high. If this is meant to be the best podcast, so I really hope I don't disappoint you guys and Gen Z. So thank you again for having me. I have spent the last 23 years at the intersection of marketing and technology, but really feel like I'm in the right place at the right time, in the right role, at the right company. And I have the privilege of leading marketing for all of our hardware and software. So within Meta, Reality Labs is our home of R&D and innovation, and where we launch new products like the ones behind me that help make the opportunity to connect with your closest friends that much better. And so through the Quest headset and mixed reality, virtual reality, unlocking different experiences that allow you to feel like you are somewhere, even if you're in the comfort of your own home, or with our partnership with Ray-Ban and our Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses, and unlocking AR and AI in ways that have never been done before, to Horizon being the future of social connection and the way that you experience friendships and games and kind of concerts, music, entertainment, and everything in between that.
Okay. And your role is leading all things marketing for Reality Labs, which is a big job because you just talked about many dimensions within.
Yes. So our team is global. We've got people all over the world helping connect consumers with the right product. And as they're thinking about, the reality is nobody wakes up saying, which VR headset am I going to buy today? But my team's job is to really make sure that if you are on the market, or if you're considering that, or if you think that mixed reality is something that you will enjoy, that you choose a Quest 3 headset. And there is obviously some other amazing options out there. But for the price and the innovation, the depth of our catalog, the game, like all the things that I think that we bring uniquely, not to mention that like social connection piece that is really in the DNA of Meta, I think we do it best. So I'm biased.
Shahar, I have a question, which is, you know, I've been a science fiction fan my whole life. I feel like science fiction sort of leads us to where we actually end up going, whether that's through Minority Report or some of the other things that we saw that then inspire people to build things. And so I also really like the idea of framing and understanding where we are in the journey of that. I don't think we're at three-body problem yet. I don't know if you guys watch that, but there's a lot of future tech in there. But I do wonder, you know, when I think about it, and I sort of set you up for this, but, you know, the idea of like from the Space Invaders video game to Ready Player One, where do you think we are in that construct? And how soon before we are living in a completely additive reality?
I love this one. I mean, so I don't think that we are at Space Invaders, nor do I think that anybody wants us to be there. I think we are at Ready Player One, but it's not to escape reality. It's like, how do we go beyond the limits of reality? And so if you're missing a game, but you want to relive it, or if you're missing a race or a match and you want to sit like you are sitting courtside, like this allows you to do that. And so it isn't about doing the unrealistic. It is about, I think, doing it differently and immersing yourself in a technology that allows you to feel like you're literally there. And so for me, it's about like more about questioning the status quo versus, you know, doing something that feels uncomfortable, because it isn't meant to do that. And it really is meant to like help you go beyond the limits of reality, whether that's proximity in the way that we're talking as if we're in the same room, even though we're not, mixed reality allows you to feel, truly feel like you are in the same room.
I love that you just sort of talked about the experience of sports or of music, because the limitations of reality and ticket prices mean that not everybody's able to go courtside or to stand next to John Legend when he's doing a performance. And I've experienced some of these things through your products. And it's something that I think so many consumers would love to connect with the things that they love the most and, of course, connect with each other. So I want to pull a lot more on this thread throughout this podcast. But, you know, at the highest level, Meta has made a tremendous commitment to all things Meta, right? There was the rebrand from Facebook. You all have long heralded helping people explore alternate and sort of mixed realities. Let's start with consumers first. How should consumers be thinking about the right way to play in this space? Is it just the sci-fi fans, or is it really everyone?
I mean, I love that, Sam, you are a sci-fi fan. I wish I was. But my hope is that we can appeal to more than that, you know? And so I think depending on where you sit, and I think we aim to have something for everyone. And so I'll take Quest for an example. I mean, we have incredible fitness on our platform. Supernatural is one of the biggest, but we have FitXR and we have Zumba, and you can train with lay males and like feel like you have a world renowned trainer in your living room without having to go, like the barrier to going to the gym and feeling the pressure sometimes is overwhelming.
The barrier to going to the gym is massive for me personally. So I love this.
Yes.
Yeah. And like you can get an incredible workout in the comfort of your living room and the comfort of the Quest 3 headset. Like we've really changed the dynamics of it so that it is more comfortable when you do work out, and the Elite strap allows you to have like that wireless, you know, endless battery kind of experience. And so it isn't just for the sci-fi fans. You brought up John Legend and music, and we have a great partnership with iHeartRadio where we did bring many artists into the metaverse where you could experience a concert with the Foo Fighters or Carrie Underwood, like literally sitting in front row, which again, a lot of people would never get that experience. And then you've got like sports, and you've got our partnership with the NBA and X Stadium, and you've got the ability to sit courtside while you're sitting on your couch. And so again, your favorite team might not be your local one and might be on the other side of the coast and you can't get to every game. And this allows you to literally feel like you're sitting front row at the Knicks, at the Lakers, whoever your home team is. And so I think it is meant to unlock new experiences. And so as a consumer, I would think of it depending on where you sit. Are you a hardcore gamer? Are you trying to get into fitness? Do you just love music? There's a spectrum even within that. And so I think consumers hopefully find what they're looking for and get a differentiated experience on our platforms. The other thing that I think that is really interesting that we've done recently is we've launched Horizon on 2D. And so if you're not ready or Ready Player One yet, you can on Instagram and Facebook play Super Rumble with your best friend who might actually be already there in mixed reality, and you're having that experience across multiple devices. And so we are trying to cast the widest net possible, democratize it, make it free, make it accessible, not make the hardware be a barrier to what you can experience. And I think that is actually the differentiator of Meta compared to others in the field, where the bar is $3,500, which is just not realistic for most humans, right? And so I think that's how we would want consumers to think about it.
Okay, so that's amazing to sort of focus on the Quest headset, but my favorite Reality Labs product is obviously the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. I was an early adopter of those too. And of course, your amazing team has hooked us up over the years. But I think I got everyone in my family those for Christmas. Everybody loves them. My parents love them. They're doing their little grandparent pictures. My sisters love them. My brother-in-laws love them. And I think that is honestly that was like a real piece of breakthrough technology, because it enables normal people who are not sci-fi fanatics to really experience some of the amazing features that you all have built. Can you give a little explanation of sort of the Ray-Ban Meta product and some of your favorite innovative features?
Yeah. So this is a great, like in a longstanding partnership that we have with Luxottica, who is the parent company over Ray-Ban and many, many, many other brands in the eyewear category and optical. And what we did is we took the very iconic Ray-Ban Wayfarer, and we enabled it. Our tech enables audio, so you can have calls on it. You can listen to your favorite Gen Z podcast. You can listen to your favorite music. You can take photos. You can also record longer videos, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. And of course, the most magical feature that we unlocked is AI. And so using very simple commands, hey Meta, you can ask questions. And what we are rolling out later this month is a feature called multimodal, which allows you to multi-sense capabilities. And so you could look at a menu in Spanish and ask it to translate it for you into English. Or you can be looking at a mountain and ask, hey Meta, to recognize what you're looking at and identify the landmark or the mountain that you're looking at. You can also ask it to give you turn-by-turn directions on how to change a flat tire, which thankfully I have not mastered and would need help with. So it is an incredible product. Not everybody needs to use every single feature or piece of functionality. And so it allows for a very seamless experience. And the commands also allow you to take photos and pictures without having to even push any button. So it is like the first truly smart glasses. We had amazing partners that helped us go to market from the agency perspective, as well as creators that really helped us show the use cases. And what we saw is that people use them in their everyday lives in the most kind of expected ways. And so Martha Stewart had them on when she was on with Jimmy Kimmel. And it's like, sure, she could have used them to like give her a recipe, but it's even more interesting because she is an expert and she knows how to make just about everything. I'm like, what if she wanted to use it to drive Miami Grand Prix race, right? And so like, how can you use it as in a way that kind of is unexpected and allows you to be smarter and also, again, be more present and like live your best life without having to pick up a device to stop that experience?
I want to pull in that thread a little bit more. Yesterday, I was speaking at Columbia Business School, which I do every year, to a class of folks who are in innovation. And a lot of the kids there, not kids, people in their 20s are working on Gen AI products. And a question came up about the Meta Quest 3 and the Apple Vision Pro and about the sort of future of these mixed realities. I said to them that I think they were ignoring the fact that humans have more than one sense and that sight is just a simple one, but that touch and that listen and audio are actually more robust and they are a bigger opportunity and a more unexplored opportunity in the space that we are all in. So if I was creating something, I said, I might look at things that were meant for being beyond the eyes. And I mentioned the Wayfarer product that you guys have, because I said, I think the idea of one, giving contextual information, you do have a camera, and I love what the alpha you just dropped about what's coming at the end of the month, about like live translation of menus, all that stuff, because that to me is where we like the iterative next step of where we want to go for augmented reality. But also the fact, just frankly, that we're not wearing headphones, because headphones are a barrier, right? That you can get information that's induction audio so that I can be having a conversation with Avery. And, you know, if my AI said, oh, by the way, remember, it's Avery's birthday next week, and I could, you know, and it could feed it to me as a way to like enhance a conversation or just add some color to my life that can be very subtle. And I think that's the Apple Vision Pro, for example, is so immersive, and it's trying really hard to be that. And I, you know, in the Quest 3, I enjoyed my experience there, but I also don't love things on my eyes because I already wear glasses. But I do think that there's such a big unlock of the context of what the power in our phones, the power in our apps, and then being able to passively get that information, that just feels extra special. And I guess I wonder where you see that type of product going. Is it at some point going to have a screen and, you know, have it be utilized information and have a heads up display? Or is it actually really meant to not have a screen and create this environmental world around you?
Two thoughts. One, we do have a setting for people that wear glasses so that you should find a more comfortable fit. So I'll make sure to get you that. But I think you're spot on. So I think longer term, and you probably heard Mark talk about this before, he's been on many podcasts himself, where all of these things are going to converge. And so you're spot on that, like, if you don't want the headset experience and you're already wearing glasses every single day, that you should have the same benefits that you would have in a more immersive experience that wouldn't interfere with your sight or experience, but actually enhance it. And I love the use case that you gave. And I think that is the the future. That is the vision. And I don't think we're that far off. And I think that what you'll see in the next iterations and generations of the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses and others to come is that we get really close to that, much, much closer to that. And so that is the vision, where these things converge and experiences that you can unlock are differentiated when they are immersive and 3D, but it doesn't mean that they're any less when they're not. And they're just different use cases. And so it depends on what it is that you're doing. And so another example that I love to give from a productivity standpoint is many companies use our headsets to train. And so like Walmart is an example where they train hundreds of thousands of employees at scale using the headset, where they can mimic the store experience and different customer service interactions without having to recreate them in a footprint of an actual store, which actually takes time, money, resources that they don't necessarily have at scale. And so there are things that can be improved significantly with the use of creating that immersive experience, whereas I don't know that the smart glasses could mimic that same experience in the same way for a training modality, right? Or Lufthansa trains their pilots on how to navigate certain weather patterns and conditions. Again, that immersive technology is probably the only way to mimic what it must be like to fly a 777 through a thunderstorm. The beauty of the smart glasses is the audio is incredible and it is spatial, but it doesn't completely block out and noise cancel where you are. So you can still have a conversation with Avery while listening to your favorite episode of Gen Z podcast, but not feel like you're isolated from Avery.
I actually want to like ask your official point of view on that audio. I think it has something to do with like, it gets to your bone. It is outstanding and amazing. So for any of our listeners who have not tried these glasses, they have this really cool feature where you can hear it and you can hear it perfectly clearly in your ears, but the person next to you can't hear it. It's kind of crazy. How does that work? There's like a name for that technology, right?
So there are multiple speakers in the arms of the glass frame, and it's spatial audio, but there are 5 different speakers. And there's also the speakers in the front nose bridge that allow to pick up. And so that's where you get the input of like, hey, Meta commands. And when you're talking to somebody on a phone call through WhatsApp or whatever, then you can hear them that way.
Yeah, the open ear speakers are A++. Great job, engineers, on that. That was a defining feature. And I've heard a lot of, you know, when the Vision Pro came out, I heard a lot of comparisons actually to the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. And I thought that was funny because like everyone I thought would compare it to the Quest. But the comparisons I was sort of reading in tech blogs and whatnot, and I'm sure you've got your perspective on this, is you all started with doing one thing really, really well on the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. And then, you know, you're adding these features, as you just sort of hinted towards what's coming next. You're adding, but like the initial product worked well for everyone. You could clearly sort of capture photos. That was where it started, and it's now sort of advanced and advanced. On the flip side, Vision Pro came out, and it is amazing, but it's not necessarily like intuitive. It's a thing you have to like build a competency around using, and they're trying almost to do everything. And, you know, the most popular use case that I could think of for myself was like watching a movie on a plane. I was like, I don't know if I need to spend $4,000 to like have a better movie watching experience on a plane. Let's see. Like, I enjoyed it, but it's not something that's like an everyday occasion for me personally. That was kind of like an interesting comparison point that I actually thought got you all a lot of positive press and positive reaction from that like tech blogger community. Do you have any takes on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was intentional. I think it's amazing, actually, that Apple launched, and it legitimizes and democratizes the importance of this space. But I really think that the barrier to entry on an Apple Vision Pro is so high and side by side, like so high that it just becomes unattainable, right? And so I think they're going to obviously like have other versions, I'm sure, that come out at a lower price point. I still stand by Quest, and I think that that is the better headset and at a much better price point with actually much bigger depth of catalog and use cases that we talked about that allow you to do more than just watch a movie. Sure, that is like one use case, but are you watching a movie every day? I mean, I think we'd all like to do that, but I just don't think that that is realistic.
So I also want to ask one thing. So I started off with sort of asking about the consumer POV, how consumers should be using this. But put on your marketer hat for a second. How should brands be thinking about this type of thing? Because we've certainly seen our share of stunt campaigns. How should brands be thinking about this space in the right way to experiment and explore and ultimately invest?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it depends on the brand, right? And so I think if a brand has creators at the heart of how they connect to their consumers, then I think Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses is a great way to feature unboxing videos or have them do demos of interacting with new products. Again, doing it hands-free to be really be able to hold products and experience brands using all your senses. And so I think Ray-Ban Meta could be a really great way for a brand to connect with a consumer through the lens of their creators in a way that no one else can, right? And so in the same way, like another example that we had is Coco Gauff, right? An amazing world-renowned tennis player. And so if she is an ambassador or a spokesperson for your brand or your clothing company, like that could be a really cool way to actually show a product through her eyes in a way that no brand has ever done before. So I think that's a really interesting way in. I think what you said about Horizon is spot on, where I think there are opportunities for us to create experiences that take Disney, for example. Like imagine recreating Disney and walking through and going on some of the rides in Horizon. We haven't done that yet. I hope that we do. But that could be a way that a brand like Disney experiences and invests in the future of mixed reality. And I think a really interesting way, just like the NBA has invested in bringing and really making their games more accessible. To me, it is about access. It is about creating that scale and allowing literally billions of people to experience your brand or your product in a way that they can't unless they go to your store or your website. And this is just a way more immersive way to do that.
I want to dive a little deeper, though, into one of the things you said, which is, let's take your Disney example, right? There's two ways to think of that, which is, on the one hand, Disney's a really expensive investment for any family. And so the idea that I can have a like experience with my kids, or they could do it, frankly, when I'm making them dinner, as opposed to watching Bluey or whatever the kids' thing of the day is. But I keep going back to this, and I want to get your thoughts on it, which is the idea of additive experience versus replacing experience. I think we sometimes do ourselves a bit of a disservice as an industry when we say that something is meant to, you don't have to do this because now it's there. You know, there's Coachella just launched Coachella in Fortnite for the event coming up this month. And I think that what I've read about is it's not supposed to be a reason not to come to Coachella. It's supposed to say, how do you experience Coachella in other ways? And I think a lot of the early brand experiments were recreating our store. And we're just putting it in 3D space. We're recreating our mall. We're recreating the travel experience. Humans, I think, love the fully immersive sensorial opportunity to be in space. And spatial computing, to me, should always be about adding the next layer on top. And that is why I think Avery probably gravitates more towards the Wayfarer glasses than she does towards the headsets. Because she is a busy lady who really has a lot of things to do. And the idea of spending an hour in that is hard, actually. You're giving up something. You're sacrificing. Whereas our phones travel with us. So I guess, one, I think, you know, Meta has had an incredible last year, I would say. So first of all, just congrats on all of the things, you know, from just how you're positioning yourselves as this, like, amazingly research and big tech company. Not that you ever went anywhere. But I think that people were counting you out way too early. And I think you've really shown the sort of staying power of what smart business and smart thinking brings to it. But I guess I've always thought that your secret sauce is the distribution power of everyone on Meta in all of the different places. And some people love it, some people are scared of that. But I think then you add these additive experiences and the idea of what you can do socially and how you can sort of, your world gets smaller and smaller because you can connect with people in more meaningful ways. So I guess, like, when you start thinking towards the future of these products, and I would add AI agents and all the stuff on top of that, what do you think is, like, the perfect world for this? Because a lot of people, I think, overfocus on the dystopian negative world.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up. So I'm glad that you brought up your kids. So I have twins that are 12 and they play all the things. They have all the devices. I'm very pro-tech with limitations. The thing is that they don't see a difference. My daughter does not see a difference in who she is in the real form when I'm hugging her than she does when she's playing Roblox or her Pinterest vision boards. She does not see a difference in who she is. So what I think our technology and how I would encourage brands to think about it, you're right. It should not be, oh, you never have to go to Disney. If that is possible for you to take your kids to, great, but it might not be. And so this is a way to experience it differently. It's not a replacement, but in the same way that, like, my daughter wants to bring her style and her fashion to every part of her and every avatar that she is in all these different platforms and the look and the feel and the makeup and all the things. She wants to bring herself into all those different experiences. That isn't dystopian. That's actually like her being able to express herself fully and feel fully present in all of those different experiences and platforms. And that, I think, is a beautiful thing, where you don't feel like you have to be a different part of yourself, but it's actually an extension of how you experience things. And so we're used to these things being 2D, and that is sufficient for a lot of things, for texting, for calling. 2D is plenty, right? Scrolling, great. Tapping, fine. But then there are other experiences that actually require you to walk through them or feel like you're there or listen as if you are sitting courtside. Like all those things just become different. And so when I do show up in those experiences, I want to still be fully myself and not feel like it is not me. And so the hope, I think, of us being able to like create that avatar that does follow you into all the different platforms and experiences that you have within Meta, but even like off platform, because we do believe in an open ecosystem. It should follow you wherever you go, that you always feel like yourself. You're just no longer constrained by the limitations of your physical reality. I think that's the beauty of it. And so I think that's where I choose to be, and also where I think we are as innovators furthering our platform and our technology to be. That is the intent.
That's amazing. And, you know, we always say perception is reality, and reality is also perception. Your daughter's perception of reality might be different than your mom's, for example. And like,
totally.
You know, yep. Like different generations have a different perception of what reality is. And you, that was so beautifully put, just to sort of articulate. I also really like your point on the open ecosystems. You mentioned Roblox. Roblox, you have a partnership with them.
Yeah.
You all have a partnerships with pretty a whole host of incredible. It sounds like everyone. Yeah. It's NBA, it's Roblox, it's artists, it's iHeart. Can you talk a little bit about how that partnership sort of helped build this open ecosystem across everything that you're doing at Reality Labs?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best example, honestly, is Ray-Ban. We could have launched our own, you know, first party. Like
your former employer did one.
Just like that. Just like that. And Google Glass previously. And that is a path. And that is like one path that is worth, I think, considering. But, you know, when you think about what it takes to even, and we talked about the headset, we talked about glasses, to even put on something on your body, to wear something that you feel like yourself in, like you feel comfortable in, that partnership with Ray-Ban and choosing a very iconic frame like the Wayfarer was intentional. And so it is probably the most popular frame and allowed us to, for a very nominal, it's like $50 difference, you get all these other added benefits. And so that was very intentional. And then all of a sudden, we also get to tap into an existing fan base that love Ray-Ban, that trust Ray-Ban, that go to Sunglass Hut and Lens Crafters to demo and experience our products. And so that marriage, that partnership was very intentional, where truly 1+1 equals like infinity, because the things that we can do when it's not just us, but it is the power of this partnership, are just enhanced in a really incredible way. And so I think that there's value in both paths, but we do see partnerships as a key part of how we go to market. The NBA being another one that is important to us. UFC Fight Pass is another important one. iHeart, as we talked about, these partnerships allow more people in. And that means that we get more input and more understanding of how consumers enjoy and love our products, how they use them every day, so we can keep innovating and building more and better experiences. And so that, I think, is important. And we do it in a way that I hope comes off and to the consumer as like really magical and intentional. These decisions that we make around like how we choose partners and who we partner with is really important for not only the consumer, but is the company like-minded? Do they believe in the same path that we want to take from an innovation standpoint? All those things really play into why those partners are so important, and honestly, why I think we've had such great success. And we have had, you know, with Zoom, we have a great partnership in Microsoft on the productivity side. So all of these partners just, again, allow us to reach more people at scale, and I think do in a way that feels more authentic to how people are already using our products, honestly.
the power of partnerships, the power of collaboration plus innovation to drive business. That's a perfect way to sum this up. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom with us today, share your insights. I do think it was one of our best podcasts ever, and we're so appreciative of you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
I love talking about hardware because I feel like we don't usually talk about hardware, Sam. And Shahar was such a perfect guest to combine innovation and marketing and hardware and then the wrapper partnerships. This was just such a perfect way to bring it all home.
Yes. I think hardware is really hard, not to, and I guess it's in the name, right? But I think that for a while, I think a lot of these big tech companies that came out of like the Web 2 era were shying away from hardware because they recognized it was a very, very difficult thing. I think they've also realized you can't just cede it to Google and to NVIDIA and to Apple, that they're the only ones who get to play in the business. But I think they've been really smart about partnering, whether it's with Ray-Ban or their acquisition of Oculus. They've been very intentional in it. I think they're actually setting themselves up really well for the future, even if today my guess is that some of these products are a little bit loss leadery, but the learnings you're going to get and what you're going to be able to develop out of it, I think it's going to be tremendous. So I really enjoyed that conversation. Was there one question you wish you had asked that we didn't get to?
Honestly, I would have spent the whole episode talking about the Ray-Ban glasses, because honestly, I think that they are just something that are totally underappreciated right now. And Meta's partnership with them, I think, has been really intentional, has been really smart. I see so many people from all walks of life sort of using them. I know, and Sarah said this, she's not giving up on the Quest. Quest is here to stay. Meta's had multiple iterations of this, and many of our listeners will, of course, remember the Oculus acquisition. And, you know, each generation does keep getting better. I think there's going to be one, maybe it's coming soon, that like really breaks through culture. We haven't totally seen that happen yet because, you know, for the reasons you mentioned, Sam, it's still like a new experience putting on a headset, but I wouldn't count Meta out on it. How about you?
I think the people in general, I'm going to say the masses, I think are quite tainted still by Facebook 2016 and what happened regarding Cambridge Analytica and the privacy conversation. And I actually think that Meta has been really intentional in trying to be pretty privacy forward in a lot of their product design. My question that we didn't get to, but I'd be interested to think about, is not for today, but really 5 years from now, the role of advertising in these sort of much more immersive worlds where I think people are not going to be like seeing billboards and banners the way we think of advertising in the metaverse today. But it's really that passive opportunity of, hey, Meta, I need a restaurant reservation. I'm gluten-free and it's six people. Can you get me something in half an hour? And how much, you know, does that become a bidding marketplace? Does that become a way for brands and sort of localities and physical spaces to engage in the kind of 3D twinning of the world that is also happening at the same time? So I think that's the question I think I would love to. And maybe that's the part two, which is really like the future of advertising in a fully immersive world. All right, Avery, have a beautiful day. Enjoy Mexico City and get a taco on my behalf.